Hi, my name's Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training, and I'm going to talk to you about better budgeting in the public sector. This is the first of two podcasts that I'm doing on better budgeting in the public sector. So as everybody's aware, I suppose, the public sector is facing massive cuts across the whole of the sector. And I want to start by actually talking about Sir Philip Green's review into central government, because it just gives us a background, a basis for going forward and thinking about how we can help to budget better and save money across the public sector. It gives us a little bit of a benchmark to think about. And Sir Philip Green was asked by the government to have a look at central government, and he focused on three areas. First of all, commodity procurement. Secondly, property dealings and contracts. And thirdly, major government contracts. So commodity procurement, we're dealing there with basic day-to-day commodities that are bought, generic goods that are purchased by central government. Secondly, we're looking at property contracts. So that's things like long-term leases would be the main element he was looking at there. And thirdly, he had a look at major contracts, and in particular things like IT service contracts that the government might be signing. What he found was this. He found that the government is failing to leverage both its credit rating and its scale. So when I supply services to organisations, to larger organisations, first of all, they'll always demand a discount from me. They know that I'm small and they're big, and they will always demand a discount. They'll always want money knocking off. And of course, usually, I suppose, I will comply with that and give them discount if I want to deal with them. And secondly, if I deal with larger organisations in the private sector, what they will do is they will take a long time to pay me. If I get my money within 30 days, I'll be absolutely over the moon, delighted, and quite surprised, actually. Usually it's more in the region of 60 days, sometimes even as long as 90 days, although I will start to ring customers if they don't pay me after 60 days, certainly. So he said the government is failing to leverage both its credit rating and its scale. And here are a few of the detailed things that he found there. He said basic commodities were being bought at significantly different prices across government departments. So really he's talking about their lack of coordination, which is something that I'm going to refer to in a few moments when we start looking at how to improve budgeting and therefore cost control within the public sector. He said that multiple contracts were being signed with major suppliers by different departments at different prices. Again, similar idea there. It's not just the goods that are being bought at different prices. You actually have situations in the public sector where different departments within central government were buying from the same supplier, but they were buying at different prices. So these suppliers must have thought it was their lucky day when they were able to ratchet their prices up to different elements of the same organisation effectively. Thirdly, he said the government is the largest tenant and owner of property in the country, and yet the use and management of the space was being done wholly inefficiently. Again, that's the coordination thing. There was no coordination of the use of space, so that office space would remain empty for long periods in some parts of central government, whereas there would be overcrowding in office space in other parts. And sometimes the situation would have arisen where, because one department is overcrowded, rather than using the dead space that the government is paying for, they would actually rent even more space. And of course, once you take out a lease agreement, you could be committing yourself for a year, 5 years, maybe even 10 years at a time. And lastly, the last of the major conclusions was that expensive IT services were contracted out for far too long with no flexibility in the contract. And by that, he meant that the government was signing agreements of 5 years or even longer for IT services. And what he found was that there were some of these contracts where the service wasn't actually needed any longer. So perhaps the department had closed down or the jobs had been transferred to other departments, but the IT service contract was still there, still in place, and there were no get-out clauses. So the government had to continue to honour those contracts. Finally, Sir Philip Green said that there were clear reasons why the government was conducting its business so inefficiently, and he gave the following reasons. First of all, the data they were using was very poor and was often inaccurate. Secondly, government was operating as a series of independent departments, something we've already mentioned before on this podcast, rather than as one big organisation. There was also, thirdly, no motivation to save money or to treat cash as if it was your own. And that's a mantra that I hear a lot in private sector organisations where the chief executive will say to people, look, treat money as if it were your own. Would you actually go out and spend that money if it were your own money that you were spending? I actually remember a long time ago dealing with an organisation and dealing with the production directors, and they were telling me as a consultant how much money they needed to spend on replacing this equipment that they were using. The equipment was still very serviceable, but they wanted to replace it with the best. And then I went back to the chief executive of this organisation with that tale, and he was incandescent with rage and basically pointed out that they would not spend this money themselves if it were their own money. And this is what Philip Green is sort of hinting that should be the mantra for central government departments. Treat money as if it's your own. Would you really spend that money if it were yours? Fourthly, he said there's no process for setting and challenging detailed departmental budgets, that budgets were sort of set in stone. Yeah, that particularly where budgets had been created that were too large, people wouldn't challenge them because maybe that budget had been in place for a number of years and the money had always been spent. And so it was accepted that it would always need to be spent going forward. Fifthly, he said there was no mandate for centralised procurement in government. There was no impetus to do that, to centralise purchasing and make sure that everything was bought from a central unit. And lastly, he said that there were inconsistent commercial skills across departments. So in some departments, the commercial skills were very good, and in other departments, the commercial skills were sadly lacking. Now, of course, a lot of what Sir Philip Green found in central government was as a result of poor control, poor budgeting, and poor coordination across central government. And these lessons can be used for all sections of the public sector. So I want to just use this podcast to review why we have budgets, because at the end of the day, budgets are the key way for controlling spending within an organisation. One of the things that Sir Philip Green was pointing out was that once departmental budgets are set, they weren't challenged. And I think that's going to be a problem that we're always going to have, that the budget is so central because the budget is what the organisation and the chief executive expects to achieve for the financial year. So let's have a look at what the purposes of budgets are, and let's have a think about those and how we can use those ideas to improve the budgeting within your organisation. So budgets serve a number of purposes. Planning, first of all. Secondly, coordination. Coordination was something I pointed out a number of times there, where Sir Philip Green was indicating that coordination was lacking. Thirdly, communication. Fourthly, motivation. That's motivation of managers. Fifthly, control of the organisation and managers' activities. And lastly, budgets are a way of evaluating managerial performance. So let's look at those in detail. First of all, planning. Of course, the key thing for budgeting and the thing that underpins budgeting and how much we budget is the strategy of the organisation. So the budget is there to put that strategy into place, and hopefully the organisation, your organisation, will have created key performance indicators that will help you track whether or not you're keeping in line with the budget. So the budget refines the plans and creates the detail for the implementation and ensures that day-to-day managerial pressures that may lead managers to take decisions which perhaps are outside of the budget, that those pressures are alleviated for the managers because the manager's always coming back to the budget. And obviously in this context, it's very important that we get the managers to constantly review the budget. So it's very important that the managers feel that they own that budget. It's no good us having a great plan in finance and then the manager's not really paying any attention to it. They've got to own that budget. They've got to feel comfortable with the information in the budget. So they've got to have a good sense of financial awareness as well to help us to make sure that that planning element is fulfilled. Secondly then, budgets help to coordinate the organisation. We've got lots of different parts of the organisation. We may have, for example, in many organisations, a canteen facility. And we've got the purchasing department buying stuff. And we've got the canteen manager who is actually cooking the food. And the purchasing manager might say, well, what I want to achieve more economic situation is to buy in bulk, and the canteen manager is saying, well, if we buy in bulk, then I've got to store that stuff first of all, so I need the storage space. And secondly, some of this stuff might be perishable. So it's actually not good for me to have too much bought at any one time. So the budget is there to help coordinate, bring together those managers and make sure that we achieve a result that helps make sure that we buy in sufficient quantity to achieve quantity discounts. And secondly, that we don't overbuy so that we lose some of the product because of its perishability. So it's the role of the finance team to help bring those people together to coordinate the budget rather than allowing the budget to be created in silos, which might not actually marry together. So coordination. And following on from coordination, of course, I hinted there that you're going to need great communication within the budget. And the accountant facilitates that communication. It's the finance team that bring together the managers from the different departments, from the different teams, and make sure that the plan that's created, the budget that's created, that is, suits all of those managers, so that one part of the budget doesn't contradict another part of the budget. Next, the budget's there to motivate managers. And as I said earlier, we've got to make sure that managers feel that they own the budget, that the budget is theirs. So what the accountant has to be very aware of here is how involved the managers are in the budget. Often I go to organisations in the public sector and I'm dealing with the managers, perhaps doing financial awareness courses for them, and they tell me that they have very little input into their budgets. And it varies even within the same part of the public sector. It can vary from organisation to organisation, how involved the managers are. And certainly, the more involved the managers are within the budget setting process, the more they feel they own that budget, and the more likely they are to help fulfil the budget and to take problems with the budget and fulfilling the budget, variances with the budget, more seriously. So to help motivate the manager, really it's their involvement that is key here. One of the other things I find with the public sector is often managers can be motivated to look after their own little part of the world, their own budget. And often we'll find that money is actually simply moving from one department to another. So Department A makes a saving, but that actually means that Department B has got to spend more money. And that's not actually creating a saving for the whole organisation. So again, we go back to the idea of coordination that the accountant has to do to make sure that any savings that managers achieve are real savings for the organisation as a whole, rather than just something that helps their particular department. Budgeting as a way of control, next. Obviously, every month we compare actual results against the budget and we see the variances and we ask managers for an explanation. It's very important here that we do two things. First of all, we don't just look at negative variances and focus on those. We look at positive variances as well, because we need to know as an organisation why we are underspending, or why are, if we have income, why that income is up. We need to know those things, even though they're good, and the temptation is not to investigate them. We need to know. Why? Well, because it might be that we've made a mistake, or it could be that there are things that we can learn. Maybe things that can be shared across other departments, how one department has managed to actually make cost savings. We also got to think, secondly, when we're looking at the control aspect of budgeting, where the problem is. If we have a negative variance, is it the manager who's wrong? Or is it the plan that's wrong? Or is it something that's gone wrong that's completely outside the control of the manager? For example, let's say the national minimum wage increases and that wasn't anticipated in the budget. That's not the manager's fault. And if we spend a lot of time as accountants dwelling on that, then we're distracting ourselves from our real job of helping to drive savings and improve the budgeting process within our organisation. Lastly, we're looking at evaluation. Budgets are used to evaluate managers' performance. And again, I've just mentioned that we need to think very carefully about whether or not the manager has done something wrong or whether the plan was wrong in the first place. Also, the other thing about the accountant's role here to help achieve better budgets is to be aware of the problems that this can lead to, the fact that the manager knows they're being evaluated against the budget. I mentioned earlier that ideally we want the manager involved in the budget process, so that the manager can feel that they own their bit of the budget. And that then can lead to problems. And the two common problems that managers may be tempted into is to, first of all, possibly pad the budget with extra costs. So they create themselves a little bit of slack so that they know that they're going to spend £10,000 on their stationery, but they actually put a budget in of £12,000. So they've got a little bit of leeway, £2,000 there, to make sure that they come in under budget. The second one is the other way, that managers can sometimes overstate their performance. And this is, a sort of short-term PR exercise. So a manager says, yes, I'm going to achieve a £5,000 cost saving this year on my stationery budget. And the reason they're saying that is because they're worried that if they don't say that, the control may very well be taken away from them. Or at the extreme end, they might be worried that their department might be closed down if they don't show that they're able to save large sums of money. And the role of the accountant here in creating a better budget is to be aware of these problems and to intervene and to cast a critical eye over the information that managers are supplying. So just to summarise this first of our presentations on better budgeting, looking at the six reasons why budgets are created, it's clear that I think the key theme that runs through all of that is to make sure that your managers are involved in the budget setting process, to make sure that you as the finance team, the accountant, act as a coordinator and a facilitator, bringing together different departments, making sure people talk to each other, and that you're also aware of the problems that are inherent in getting the managers who are delivering the cost savings involved, and that you cast a critical eye over this. And again, you're able to communicate back to these managers and come to a good conclusion over the level of expenditure that you should have for the year. My name's Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.